Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I am TJ Van Tol, and with me today on the panel is Jack Harrington.
Hello.
And Paige Niedringhaus.
Hey, everyone.
And our special guest today is Chimizy Innocen. Chimizy, welcome to React Roundup.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you start by telling people, you know, who you are, what you do, why you're famous, all those good sorts of things.
Okay. Wow, am I famous? I wouldn't say I'm famous, but okay, I've been reached out a few times and complimented a couple of times since I started writing technical articles. In fact, I got two writing gigs, Log Rocket and I Am On Demand, from recruiters reading my articles. So maybe I'm a little famous. The recent highlight actually was when I was reached out for this podcast. I couldn't in a million years believe it. It was like a dream, sure, because it was still like a fantasy that many people were reading what I wrote. But then again, that's the good thing about it. You can do awesome things and have great career from the comfort of your home.
Yeah.
Also, personally, I graduated from college, information technology, and still currently freelancing. But on the side, I write technical articles on Log Rocket, Strapi, IOD, then personally on dev.to and Ashnode. Yeah.
That's awesome. A great way to get out there.
That's just what I was going to say. Even if you're doing freelance work, it's a great way to show potential employers or new clients you really know what you're doing. So kudos for that.
Thank you.
Big time. And I love your portfolio site. It's beautiful.
Wow.
We'll put a link to that in the description.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topendevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topendevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topendevs.com.
I know we wanted to, we have a lot of questions because I kind of want to dive in a little bit into, because I know we have a lot of listeners that are in a similar position that kind of want to get their name out too. So I want to dive into that a little bit, but I know there was also one of your articles we wanted to talk specifically about use effect and cleaning up after it. So maybe you could start by just explaining to people that aren't familiar, like maybe we could just start, you know, the basics, like what use effect does and why you might need to clean up after it, for just an FYI to people that might not be aware.
Okay. Use effect hook. It works like the component did mount, component did update, and component will mount in class component. So it does these three things together. You can use it to fetch APIs and the rest. That's commonly what people use it first for. Okay. So the cleanup function, the article was, I was trying to write about the cleanup function. React is built in a way, use effect is built in a way that you can return a function inside it. And this function is the cleanup function. And it works like the component will amount method in class component. Use effect executes the return function before amounting. So, oftentimes, it's usually good to clean up the function. Let me use this analogy. The cleanup function works like a housekeeper in hotels. Their work is to clean up and tidy the room after each customer has used the room. Wow. I should have said that in my article, actually. I like this analogy. So that's what the cleanup function does. It tidies up your, it returns a function where you tidy up your code, like clean up, canceling a subscription, and also canceling up with fetch and others, right?
Yeah, and I think, too, this is kind of like an important sort of thing to be aware of if you're not already, because at least in my experience, these can be some of the absolute worst things to debug imaginable.
Oh,
because
yeah.
If you don't, like, if you don't clean up after actions, like, you don't, like, you know, reset your reset flags or, you know, whatever you need to do there, You're not going to get a clean error message that said, hey, you forgot to do this. You're just going to get something cryptic that could happen. Maybe it's like some sort of a memory leak that you... which is even the worst, right? Because you'll never track that down to, individual things. You'll just get absolutely weird messages in your logs and weird customer complaints. So the more proactive you can be here, the better.
Yeah, it's a less talked about one, but maybe that's something that you could share with listeners, Chemezi, is when do you need this use effect cleanup? Because it isn't certainly for every use effect that people will use. It's just for certain ones in particular.
Yes, actually. Normally, it's not that commonly used. Like, for example, someone wants to just fetch an API. So it doesn't actually need the use effect cleanup function. But when the fetch is based on a prompt, okay, for example, you are trying to get the post. So you have to get the post using the ID. So then to get the post, the ID changes. So the cleanup function is dependent on that ID. So in such a case whereby you fetch a post, but the post is not yet completed, and you move out to fetch another one or move out of the page, the fetch will still be going on in the background. And on completion, it will try to update the state, but this time it's updating a state on an unmounted component. Then it will throw that error, saying can't perform a React state update on an unmounted component. So in such a scenario, you need the use effect cleanup function to clean up the code before rendering, before the next render.
It's a similar sort of thing with timers too, right? If you create a set interval in your use effect, then when you return that, the cleanup function, that's when you're going to want to clear it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I think the way I've been told to kind of learn this before is to build like a timer, like within an app with routes, like, because if you don't clean up after yourself, it's very easy to build a timer that doesn't work like you want it to work. You have clocks that are, you know, stopwatches that are just starting and stopping, and you know, it's chaos.
You have 1,000 stopwatches.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a classic one. And managing that dependency array is really tough as well. You know, folks, you don't really understand when that fires all the time, or maybe it's firing because you got a reference to an object and that's changing all the time, as opposed to the actual ID that you're looking to change key on. Do you have any hints for people on how to manage those dependency arrays?
Okay, I don't really get this. Come again.
That's okay. So that when you have that dependency array at the end of the use effect, that the array of the keys on, like the ID of the post. So sometimes that can cause some errors. Do you have any tips for folks on how to avoid those errors, those issues?
The dependency array.
Yeah, that's okay.
So Chemezi, I'm also curious what sort of inspired you to go down the path of writing some of these articles, and like, what was your first step? Like, I'm thinking especially of people that, because I know a lot of people, and I've been in this boat before too, where you're kind of intimidated. Like, I'm not good enough to write for this. You know, what do I have to say? How do I get things out there? So I'm kind of curious, what encouraged you to get started, and what sort of advice do you have to other people that are looking to write articles like this?
Okay. Starting out, it was actually a mentor when I started out that advised me to develop my soft skills, which included communication and then technical writing. So, my first article was called The Starting Point. It was not a technical article per se. It was a point that I considered tech and I considered technical writing. So I was just writing about why I considered this part and where my path is leading. So it wasn't a technical article per se, it was just a broad article. So I would say, starting out, I never thought I would be writing technical articles or being paid to be writing technical articles. It was actually for fun. So it was in the same 2019. So I wrote a couple of articles, like, let's say four on Hashnode and then on dev.io. So after a while, I left it because I was still in school and I had my project. Actually, I was assigned a school project my final year, so it took a whole lot of time for me, so I was more engaged with that. And then again, at a point, I decided to pick it up again, and I wrote an article, how to blur a background image in React. So I also wrote how to blur a background image in React Native, and I think that was the pinnacle of my technical writing, because because then a recruiter from Logbucket emailed me I was like, hello, I saw this article and I loved it. You kind of write for us. when I first got the email, I was unsure because I never thought I would write paid technical articles. It was just, let me just write, because I loved writing actually. So it was just something I wanted to do. But then again, since then, I'm reading many paid technical articles, and that's it. The advice I would give to those starting out is to just write. Most times I just imagine, or rather, okay, what works best for me is this. If I see a hard concept that I cannot really get over, why coding? I try to learn much as possible by writing. So most times I'm not just writing for people to learn. I'm trying to write so that I will learn, because most of my articles is 80% research and then like 20% like 15% random writing, then 5% proofreading. So I just write it out there, and then later I try to proofread and the rest. So my advice is just start writing. If you have a hard concept that you can't get over, write about it. By so doing, you're not just teaching others, you're also teaching yourself in the process. Yeah.
Yeah. I found that from writing my own articles is that I think that I understand something. And then once I start trying to explain it, I realize, or I do the extra research to really get a much better understanding of it. But one question that I had for you is, how do you come up with the topics? Is it side projects that you're building, or things that you learned while you were in school, or just issues that you come across as you're doing research? Like, how do you decide what do you want to write about? Because as TJ said, it feels like a lot of things have been written about in many ways, but then we still find our own unique flavor to bring to it a lot of times that might help somebody else. But I'm curious, like, what do you do for ideas?
Okay. It's in two places. First, on my personal articles, I take up concepts that I love. Like, for example, when I tried out Tailwind CSS. So I wrote an article, Getting Started with Tailwind CSS. So, and it was also when I learned about JavaScript array.at. So I wrote about it. So what I do is any concept that inspires me, or not really inspired, that intrigues me, I try to write about it. Then on the other way, the paid articles, they are paid articles actually. So so it just give me the recruiters give me a list of topics to write about, and I choose the one that resonates. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So I choose the one that resonates.
Recruiters.
I always had it be the other way, where you pitch ideas to them. They say, we like articles about React or DevOps or things like that, but then kind of ask you to come up with things that you think you could write about. So that's interesting that they are giving you kind of a list of ideas.
Yeah, you can also pitch it, a topic, but it's hard to pitch a topic because most people have written about it. So it's very difficult unless you're writing your personal article. But once it's a paid article for blogs and companies, it's very difficult to pitch a topic. So most times I just wait for them to send topics. And also I try to pick topics that are not that widely written about, or maybe they are not widely covered. Like when I wrote about Cube.js, building analytical forms with charts with Cube.js, when I tried researching about it, I saw that I don't think I saw a good tutorials on it. So it was really difficult. So, and because of that, I chose to write about it. So I had to spend weeks learning how to use Cube.js and then writing about it. So yeah.
How much time do you spend supporting your articles? Do you have people like hitting you up? Hey, Innocent, saw your article on Cube. Well, how do I do this?
You mean how I write my time frame?
No, do people actually hit you up for advice? Do they come back to you and say, oh, I saw your article on such and such. How do I do this with it?
Oh, yeah, they do. Actually, yeah. Correct. I'm trying to help my friend break into technical writing too. We became friends through the same process. He saw some of my articles. I loved it. I said, seek me some advice. So first, I'm overwhelmed, obviously, because he's still new. So I try to read technical articles of people that I look up to. People like Josh Comey. I don't know if you know Josh. Sarah Dressler and some others. So I try to read some of their posts and keep up to date with what they say on Twitter and the rest. They're on technical articles. And so then I'll know how to assist and advise others.
That'd be a great article on its own.
Yeah, exactly.
How to get started.
Yeah. How to get started in tech writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad
we have another Tailwind fan. Thank you.
I knew that was going to come back.
I've actually listened to some podcasts where Paige now that said she's not a fan of Tailwind.
Not the biggest fan, no. I'll use Bootstrap, but Tailwind, I'm just not a huge lover of.
So, Timothy, I'm also curious, did you have a background in writing as well? Like, because your writing is quite good. And I'm curious, because I know a lot of people are sort of intimidated by that aspect as well. Do you have any sort of background in writing or writing outside of tech?
Yes. Actually, my mom helped quite a lot. While growing up, she gave me a task. Every day I studied the dictionary and I wrote, she bought a book for me. So I wrote 10 words that I discovered every day. And I'll make sentences with all the 10 words. So she was like, do this every day and then write a book. None of the books you have published actually, but they are fun to do. And in the process, my vocab and grammar structures became good. So yes, I do have a background in that. A personal background, yes.
Yes, go mom. And also, yes. It's a reminder to people too. Like, if you're trying to get into tech, you don't just pay attention in your software classes, right? Like, these writing things can really pay off.
Yes.
If you want to get up to like the senior lead architect kind of level, a lot of that is around communication. You got to go and think out the architecture, collaborate with other folks to come up with, what you're going to do, and then write it down, and communicate it and be able to present it, not just to other engineers, but also to other groups of people who might not have any technical background to be able to convey what the advantages are. So yeah, go mom.
Yeah.
Those technical skills.
Yeah. The writing skills. I mean, even out of the technical context, I mean, just being able to write an email or being able to write a good resume, or like when a recruiter reaches out, like they're going to judge you based off of how well you're, like if you write a response that's broken grammar and such, then that's going to get taken into account whether you want it to or not. So skills like this do end up mattering. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, they do matter. And I know now.
And one thing that I noticed once I started writing is that it took me a while to actually find the style that worked for me, or to find kind of the formula of here is a little bit of introduction and this is why I'm writing about this topic, like a problem that I was trying to solve, and then going into the actual meat of the article. But it's something that I think comes over time as you write more. You just get a better feeling for, when should I include an image, or when should I include a code snippet, or when should I explain what this concept is because it might be lesser known. So it's something that you get better at as you do it more often. For anybody who wants to start out, your first few articles, you're going to look back on them and be like, but if you keep at it, eventually you will get really good and you'll get things like companies reaching out like LogRocket or wherever asking you to write for them. So I think that's a big part of it that isn't talked about nearly as much, is that you're not going to write just one article and then companies will come to you and ask you to write on their behalf or for them. You're going to write a whole bunch. Nobody's going to do anything with it. You'll have like next to no page views on it. But if you keep doing it and keep refining it as you go, you'll start to pick up that traction. Because I did it for probably a year on Medium, and I was just publishing it under my own name because I didn't have any connections with any of the publications or anything like that. And then one came and reached out to me and asked if I wanted to publish under them, which dramatically increased the audience that was reading my stuff. And then after that, I started getting requests from companies like LogRocket to write for them. So it's a lot of just kind of throwing stuff at the wall early on and seeing what sticks, and a lot of it won't. But eventually, if you keep doing it, it will start to get better.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and, in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. Whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
I think, Jim, you had a good point earlier, too, that I didn't call out at the time, but you had mentioned you started off writing things that you thought were fun or like interesting. And I think that's a key component to this, too, because I think if you see something like this as a chore, then you're going to come into it with that sort of mentality. Like it's, I got better write this, like and you're going to hate it. But if it's something that you kind of want to explore because it's a topic you're interested in, you're not only going to do a better job with it, but you're going to enjoy it more and want to do it. It's not going to seem like a required, I have to do this. You're just going to have more fun with it and actually do a better job at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I've always enjoyed. I've not seen writing as part of anything work or something. It's always fun to write, and I always I broke my record of writing. I've written consecutively now for like 22 weeks. Yes, because I timed my attack.
Wow.
Because I try to keep track of how I write and the time I write. So before it was like say 8 weeks, 2 months or so. But since last year, October to now, So I've been writing consistently. So
every day?
Not every day, but at least three times a week. Times a week. Most times it's not really something that I will publish. It's just something I just open up my Dropbox and start writing. Sometimes it's just an idea that pops into my head. Maybe I might publish later, maybe I might not. But I just enjoy writing. So I just write.
That's a really great idea to go and like just put those ideas out there, because then later on you can hit them up and be like, oh yeah. And when you're stuck for ideas, you can go back to that and it's a gold mine. You can find, maybe let it write a little outline in there, have a couple of notes around, hey, this is an important site, you know, that I went to, that, or this is the NPM module that I needed, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Again, your mom was so right. It's about doing it like every day. That's the thing. You want to get good at something, you do it a lot and you do it regularly. Like if you want to get good at coding, code every day. If you want to get good at writing, write every day.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there's also some side projects that you've been working on that you wanted to talk about as well. Do you want to talk a bit about what you've built?
It's not yet done, like 50% done. It's actually a school project. I've not found a proper name to give it. Still tried maybe school pride or something. It's a school project about high schoolers that just graduate from high school and looking up to universities or colleges they want to enroll in. Okay, here in Nigeria, I'm in Nigeria actually. So, and here in Nigeria, we don't really have a good note about all the schools. And okay, for example, me, the college I went to was because my brother went to this college. Not because I searched for any college. So, and after I went to the college, I discovered that it was, they are not like top 10 in the field that I went for. So, but already, I'm already in the college. So I had to just go through it. So I'm trying to build a website or an app that will bridge that gap. You can search for colleges based on the fields you want, based on rankings, based on distance too. Maybe you don't want to go far from home. You just want a college that is near from you. So you search based on those parts and then you see the top best schools. You can choose from it. Also, alumni or people who are attending the colleges can also comment so that you know what is really going on in this school. Maybe this school is not so good and the alumni will say, I will tell you that before you go into each school or before you start applying for each of the schools, you know what you want already. Yeah. That's what the project is about.
Nice. Are you doing that in React?
Yes. React.
Nice. And is it full stack? So you're doing the whole thing? You're doing like, what are you using on the back end?
I'm only a front end developer. A friend is helping with the back end. He's doing Express and Node.js.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
And are you using Tailwind up on the front?
Sure.
So how did you get started with web development or with your interest in technology? Was it something that you liked, you know, as a kid or as a teenager, or was it really more after you got into college that you decided that was what you wanted to do?
Okay. I've always tried to tell the story. Actually, I loved programming from watching movies and source of all those things. Yes. So when it was time to apply, and that was one of the reasons I went to my brother's school, because he actually liked me because they knew that that was what I loved. So it was like, my school is doing this, so you better apply for it. So I didn't bother checking for any other school again, because that's just what I wanted to do. So immediately the next day, I just ran and enrolled for the application and the rest. So I've always loved programming. Though in my university days, yeah, I did a programming course, information technology, but it was theoretical, it was a theoretical aspect of it. So I had to start learning on my own, and then later, towards my finals, I went to a boot camp.
I've heard similar things from a lot of people that they have either information technology degrees or computer science, but it, like you said, it's a lot more theoretical than hands-on with technologies that people are using today. So what did you get out of your boot camp, or what did you learn there that kind of helped actually make you able to build websites or to take what you'd learned in theory and put it into practice?
Okay, so the boot camp I went to, they assumed that I knew nothing of programming. So that's what they did. So they assumed I knew nothing, because they knew that what I knew was a head knowledge of what maybe a HTML tag is. Yes, I did Java, I did SQL and the rest in school, but they knew it was just theoretical knowledge and I couldn't actually code. So they assumed that I knew nothing. So they started afresh. And what they did actually was more of advice, guidance, coaching, and then projects. Like some of the projects were like punishments. Like they just come one day and they'll punish us with some projects. And then the first day I learned how to use the UseEffect tool, it was actually a project. And it was a punishment that we are tasked to build a life score application, like a football life score application. So at first we never knew what a hook was, and we've never heard of hooks. But because of that project, we had to research and we knew what hooks was. So that was what, and that I also got my mentor from the bootcamp who encouraged me to start writing technical articles. So virtually 50% of what I know now, I got it from bootcamp.
I know a lot of people will think about hooks as punishment, honestly. Particularly by how they treat you when they go wrong.
Yeah.
When you forget to clean up, right?
Right.
Full circle.
Yeah. All right. I have a question, though. Hold up. So movies. So you got excited about programming from the movies? I've never seen a movie that had an interesting programmer in it, honestly. They're always like some recluse.
Yeah. Not really interesting. Like the movie called Is it Grey Heart or Dark Heart? One of two. It's an old movie. Not really. They are doing impossible things in the movies. Like you see a programmer, or let me use, for example, hackers want to hack the White House.
Oh yeah,
you see, programmers just clicking on keys, and things will just be appearing. So those things were the things that intrigued me. And I thought at first, when I grew up, I thought it was really how it was when I first told my brother. Because I searched about computer science schools, the best computer science schools in the world back then. So it was Massachusetts, MIT. Mm-hmm. So when I told my brother that I would do my PhD in Massachusetts, he was like, can you press the keyboard like how these guys are pressing? So it was actually like a challenge at that point that I started learning to master the keyboard. We had the full set desktop. But I didn't know anything about it. What I did was just mastering how the keyboard works. And me and my brother, we play the game. Like, we'll just close our eyes and we'll be taxed. And the other person will ask us, let me say, identify the G key or get H key. With our eyes closed, we'll look for it. So it was part of the game. And those are the things that helped me actually.
Yeah. Probably a much better typist than I am.
I'm going to put a link in the chat and the show notes to a site called hackertyper.net if you haven't seen it before. And it's kind of amazing, right? It's a site that basically you can type like mad and it'll just spit out like this C code on the screen. The idea being like you could sit in a coffee shop and just like just go absolutely nuts hitting random keys and just and look like a hacker from the movie. So if you haven't seen it before, you should definitely check it out because you can live out your dreams.
Yeah, I just opened it now.
It's so true. So sad, though.
I always find myself like really focusing on when they do show those kinds of things to try and see if it is actually code that they're writing in the command line or if it's just some garbage that doesn't actually work.
It's usually PHP. I've seen so much PHP in movies. Yeah, hacking the site and it's like a PHP script to like put a date on the page or something. You're, what?
No. It's like how you know there's a software developer. If like you see, if they show some code for a second, you're like, hold on, we need to rewind and pause on that exact screen because I got to see what they're showing there actually.
I try to use the command line to flex with my friends that don't know anything about code. I might just write something like ls. And to display everything, and they'll be like, whoa, what did you just do? So actually, it talks actually.
It's funny how engineers are so into like the look of the terminal and stuff. Like whenever I get my, put up my videos, half the questions I get are what theme,
what font?
Oh yeah, yes.
What terminal settings are you using? All of that stuff, and it's like none of that is gonna. Or what keyboard do you use? I've even gotten that. Really?
Right. It's not the keyboard, man. And what VS Code theme are you using?
Oh, every time.
What's funny is I get those questions, but I also ask those questions. Oh, so yeah. I'm probably one of those people in your in your comments. Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't stop black magic. All you gotta do is just like go around and like, take the themes and like just click through until you find one that you like and you're like, okay, there you go. I like purple or like this or like whatever. Not crazy.
Well, Chimizy, this has been an awesome chat. I've had a lot of fun. Is there anything that we've missed? Any topics? Anything that you wanted to discuss or any advice you wanted to pass on that we haven't touched on to this point?
Not really. Yeah. But for advice for folks like me who are still starting out, yeah, the advice is just start writing. At least it has worked for me. It has worked for a couple of others. I know maybe it works for you guys too. So even if you don't know what to write about, you can just, there are always arguments about tech going on in Twitter. Tech Twitter currently is like a courtroom for different arguments, like which programming language is more popular, is React better than Vue and the rest. So you might just look at those topics and pick one of them and start writing about it. Since you don't know what to write, or maybe you think that the ideas you have has been written by others, you can still write it. Actually, the more you write, the better you get at them, as you say.
Oh, yeah.
So just start writing. And also, especially for those folks that think that this particular idea or this particular concept has been written more times. Anytime you go to Google and type any random thing, you see pages up to like 10, 100 coming out. Many, many people are writing about it. So don't think about it like that. Just start writing. Even if the concept has been written a million times and it's that same concept that is intriguing you, just write about it. Yeah.
Cool. That is some great advice to end on. So why don't we use that then as a segue to our picks?
Hey, folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
And Paige, do you want to kick us off?
Sure, I will kick us off. So for those of you who are in the Northern Hemisphere, you might be going through winter or first spring or possibly second winter or third spring. If you live somewhere like Atlanta, where it varies 30 degrees on the day. But one thing that I've found that I really like and use frequently are grippy socks. So they're regular super fuzzy socks, but they have little like little plastic grippies on the bottom of them so that they don't slide around and you don't slide off. And when you're working from home and you don't wear shoes, like a lot of us do, I think, as developers, they're really nice. You can easy to take off, easy to throw on when your feet get cold, things like that. And I have really been using mine a lot lately. So that's going to be my recommendation today is grippy socks. You know, they're really cheap on Amazon. You can probably get a 2-pack for $10 US or something. So good investment. I would highly recommend them if you're like me and your feet start off really cold and then warm up throughout the day.
Cool. I'll actually go next just because I also have a cold weather-ish pick. So I'm going to pick a stylus and I'll hold it up so my co-host can see it. Those of you listening won't be able to. But a common problem here where it does get very cold is that it's very hard to use a phone screen outside when you also have to wear gloves because it gets depressingly cold here. And if you haven't tried before, they have gloves that have like they put tips on the end so you can use them with smartphones and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you that those things are not good. They fall apart almost instantly. Like they work great at the store when you're trying them out. But like
when it's not cold.
Right. Through actual usage, though, like that, the stuff, like, because they put like some sort of like metal coating on the fingertips to conduct, you know, whatever magic science voodoo is going on. But that stuff wears off over time. And so eventually they just turn into normal gloves. And so finally, I've come around using a stylus. And my wife got me one for Christmas that's like a nicer one that has like adjustable ends. And it's great because you can wear your super heavy, bulky gloves and just carry it around when you're doing something or you need your phone so you can be out when it's 0 degrees or whatever and still doing your thing. So I was a stylus naysayer for a while, but I've come around. I'm done with the phone gloves. And I'll link to the specific one I've got just in case somebody really wants to dive in and get like an adjustable one and really go all out. And that is my pick. Jack, what picks do you have for us?
Okay, well, I was just going to have one, but y'all convinced me to do two here. So, and I'll work on your theme of like the cold and dark weather thing. So another thing about living like in the way, way north. So I'm up in Portland and living up here, you get really short days. Not like Alaska short, but short. So, you know, you get up in the sunrise at maybe 8, goes down to 5, and you don't get a lot of sun, especially particularly if you're working from home and you're basically inside all the time. So there's a thing called a SAD lamp or a seasonal effectiveness disorder lamp that you just kind of put on for like 30 minutes or so. It's this weird blue glow thing, and it gives you your vitamin D, I guess. It does something to help with that kind of that blah that comes in. And then so the second thing I've got
a big difference from it.
Not this time around. It's only because I've only been doing it for a couple of days, but I, you know, back a couple of years ago, I was heavy into it and yeah, it helped a lot, honestly.
Nice.
Yeah. Or at least I thought it helped a lot, whatever. I wasn't sad. So there you go. And then the second thing is a little piece of software. It is paid for, but it's really cool, called Mountain Duck. It's a companion program with CyberDuck. And what it does is if you are an OS X, an Apple person, it basically mounts any of the different kind of exotic file systems like S3, like on your Finder, you know, so they just show up like an actual just straight up folder. And that's really handy if you want to make, you know, if you're just doing some asset stuff and you just want to, you know, have it over an S3, it's just drag and drop. You can edit it in VS Code, save it, and it saved. And that's just super cool.
Nice.
Awesome. Timothy, what picks do you have for us today?
Okay. I wasn't prepared for the picks. So I will take a different route. My pick would be a movie about elementary. It's a movie about teachers that teach public school, in the public school. So even though there are many odds against them, like low funding and the rest, they try as much as possible to make sure their students succeed. And it's a funny and interesting movie. So it's quite a good one.
Yeah, Abbott Elementary is hilarious. My wife and I are watching that. It's a great, great show. And actually, I grew up in Philly, so I know all about that whole shtick. It's hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah, and those teachers are amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. One last question for you, Timothy. If people want to follow you, keep in touch with you, check out your writing, where is the best place to do that?
Dev.hashnote and on log record to most of my articles on the hash node, Zipperlands. That's an unhashed node, Team is Innocent.
Okay.
Awesome. Cool.
We will get those links in the show notes. And thanks for joining us. This has been really awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Well, thanks everybody again for joining us. And until next week, see everybody.
See you then.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.